Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Monday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. March coming in like a lion. Dow futures up nearly 400. Vaccine optimism as J&J gets FDA approval, begins shipping, bonds stabilize, the House passes stimulus, and a lot more retail earnings are heading our way. Our roadmap, though, begins with these easing rate fears as stocks are poised for gains at the open.
Plus, Exxon continues to shake up its board of directors. Activist investor Jeff Ubben and Comcast former CFO Mike Angelakis have been added to that board. Just what is it going to mean for the energy company's climate initiatives? And 4 million single-dose Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccines are now out for delivery. 20 million expected by month's end. The U.S. continuing to set daily vaccination records, Carl. And it's just so nice to actually say some good news.
You got that right, David. At this point, Jim, we got 46 million people in this country have had at least one dose. That's about 15% of the population. And J&J, of course, deliveries begin in the morning. And hearing you talk to Becky about not just a question of if this economy starts to get some fresh legs, but when.
I think this is very exciting. And if you notice the cadence that Alex Gorsky talked about, you're really just... it's a major ramp. And I know that Dr. Gottlieb correctly pointed out, obviously, that there's vial issues. By the way, Honeywell has a fantastic vial. I think people should understand that. And it's a great way. I'm sure right now Damchek is calling these people and saying, listen, we've got a new kind of vial. But what I like about this, Carl, is we are now going to begin to say it will be, David, I don't know, Memorial Day. We are able to pull up and through when we thought, because of J&J's amazing capacity to make so many vials, and for it not to be able to be frozen and put in dry ice, but just boom, UPS there, McKesson, UPS, McKesson, your store.
Right. Your CVS, your Walgreens.
It's real.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly feels that way. I mean, it's all anecdotal, of course, from my perspective in terms of various friends who are getting the vaccine, but it's started to really pick up. It really has, Jim, at least in the New York area, certainly, and actually amongst friends around the country. So that's great news. And yeah, maybe you do move ahead, so to speak, in terms of your time when things are going to fully reopen. Even with the continued concern about variants. And by the way, those who are going to continue to be very conservative in how they behave, Jim, which, you know, does weigh down certain parts.
Yep. And Carl, obviously, we have a lot of people who have already had it. Now, I don't know whether they're necessarily going to take the vaccine anyway. I mean, the advice is from a lot of people that you should. But you combine the people who have had it, the people who have had it whom we don't know about, the people who are getting this. I think that you can set up a mosaic that says the summer may be, we still may need masks, and I'm thinking about the Disney conference call where they talked about you may need them. But I think we're going to start thinking that, you know what, it's not so crazy that Royal Caribbean's trading it where it is. It's not so nutty that Norwegian's trading where it is. It's not insane that United Airlines ordered 25 new planes from Boeing this morning. And you know what planes they ordered, David?
What planes, Jim?
The ones that used to be, you know, people were worried about.
Really? They ordered the Max?
Yes.
The Max, yeah.
This is huge.
Well, Jim, your points are well taken. You look at the winners for the S&P in the month of February, RCL and CCL were numbers 3 and 4. And as for Gorsky, he was on Squawk earlier this morning. He was on the Today Show, too, this morning, talking about the potential for it to help asymptomatic transmission, the potential for it to help against the variants, and just what a miracle it is that this got done in 12 months.
Here we are a year later on the cusp of literally having 100 million doses delivered in the United States by the end of June. close to a billion around the world by the end of this year is just a remarkable achievement. And while our doctors, our scientists, our engineers are incredibly proud and humbled, I think it also gives a lot of hope to our country and to the world.
You know, Jim, I was thinking, Goldman last fall did have a bear case scenario that they drew out in which J&J would have failed because of what they thought at the time may be safety concerns. You didn't buy it then.
No.
And your faith has been well rewarded.
Yeah, I dealt with a lot of the people who were involved with making it. And there were people who, I mean, I didn't take those classes. They're very hard, but they walked me through it. And their level of confidence was, it made me so excited that I remember going out and saying that I think that science is going to prevail. And then there was a New York Times piece that made fun of me and said that, David, I always think about it because it said I was at Faber College. It said that I was Otter. And I presented a science, and it had great sport with me. And, I always loved that thing because, you know, I'm from Philadelphia, and I love these people who make fun of me. Science prevailed, David.
Yes, it did.
And by the way, Dr. Bourla at Pfizer, that stock is so low. But yes. J&J stock is soaring. And if you remember, David, we talked about people will buy the news.
I know. You made that point at the end of Squawk there. People will buy the news. Interesting. As opposed to what?
Buying before the news and then selling on the news.
Well, right?
You and I both said this thing's going to be approved. Okay.
Yes.
Maybe as soon as this weekend.
Yes.
And it did. And the stock's up. And I said that that's going to be very odd because in the old days, you bought the rumor and sold the news.
Of course. I mean, right. And in this one, I don't think there was a great deal of question as to whether it would have been a very big story if it had been turned down.
Will you take it or are you going to hold out for Moderna? What are you doing?
I'm not holding out. I'm getting there. I'm getting close. Most likely Moderna.
And Carl, were you happy if you get to J&J?
I will literally take whatever I can get. I think they're all great options.
My daughter's taking the AstraZeneca today.
Can you mix and match?
No.
Can you get a Moderna?
Absolutely not.
And then get a J&J a few months later?
You're confusing people.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
You can't mix and match.
Do you still need two doses of that Moderna and Pfizer?
Why not?
Okay. All right. Just checking.
I have to go on a plane soon.
How'd you feel after the second dose? Did it?
It's a really interesting question because I didn't realize how tired I was.
Uh-huh.
I like to stand up when I work and write for Mad Money.
Right.
And I did fall asleep standing up and caught myself. No, I did. I didn't know. I didn't know how tired I was.
I would have liked to
I would have thought I was hungover, but I hadn't had anything to drink.
I would have liked to have seen that, you falling asleep standing up.
As my doctor said, Jim, if you're having a reaction, fatigue after your second dose, it just shows that you actually have an operating immune system. So it's somewhat encouraging. What was more interesting, I thought yesterday, Jim, was on the Sunday shows, Fauci now moving to another stage in which we start talking about high school kids getting vaccinated, maybe as early as October, kids under 12, maybe Q1 of 22. But that's going to be another chapter as we move through this crucible.
Yeah, but we're still stuck with this world where it's case by case and state by state. I don't know how we got to the point where it wasn't like polio, where everybody had to go to the high school and take the sugar cube or get the inoculation to end polio before the sugar cube. I don't really understand the pastiche that we have. David, there are parts of the country that are way ahead and the parts of the country with a lot of vials everywhere that are not in people's arms. And it is very difficult to try to figure out what the heck we got stuck with, because we might be get something. Pennsylvania doesn't.
Yeah.
Florida doesn't. I mean, it is. We did get handed a.
No, we did. But right. But it's breaking out all over now. You know, it's starting to become available in ways that a few weeks ago it didn't seem to be. And
you sound optimistic.
It's funny. I had a bunch of friends this weekend who got the vaccine.
Really?
Yeah. Whether it's phone calls from the pharmacy and saying, hey, we've got some extra ones. Whether it's a place they're administering it in a certain part of the city, again, a phone, or whether it was somebody who had an underlying condition. I mean, those are all getting done. Younger people now.
The smokers in Jersey?
Yeah. The state of Connecticut moving to 55 as of today. So it's happening, and it's great.
Well, Jim,
we don't want to forget that it's still out there.
The variants.
The cases are still higher than they were not that many months ago. And so you do still continue to need to behave appropriately.
Well, the anti-maskers are very powerful.
For a while. Yeah.
And people feel that masks don't work. obviously they did once the new government came in and said people should wear them. We did get a big drop. But you know, these things are fake news, mainstream media news. Carl, I find it tiresome because the actual numbers dropped when people had to wear masks. It dropped.
Yep, that's true. Yep, mitigation efforts really did pay off. It wasn't all vaccine distribution. Jim, if all this is true and we're looking at an economy that's poised to have fresh legs, why over the weekend were so many Wall Street notes saying that the 10-year yield was going to back off?
I don't know. I mean, I think that there's going to be a lot of economic activity, but we had a figure this morning that was in the, when Simone was doing the five, which talked about the balance sheet of America and the trillions that people have. And that means that there may not be loan demand. David, the balance sheets of America had always been shoddy. And now I don't know whether you actually need a loan to do a lot or you put down far less than you would.
Right.
So the demand and the demand among big skyscrapers and building infrastructure.
Well, that may.
No.
That may not be there.
No.
For new office buildings.
No.
Hard to see that.
Shopping
in the near
centers.
Term. Shopping centers.
No.
No.
Shopping malls.
No.
No. And those are the ones.
Data centers. Yes.
Data center. Yes. And in strange places.
Yes. And in strange places.
But David, what do you think about the possibility?
New energy
sources. I have Martin Marietta on tonight.
Okay.
That we really do an infrastructure bill that would encourage and make things a little hotter.
It would. Right now, we still got to stay focused on whether we're going to get the $1.9 trillion that seemed likely. But, you know, there's a debate about the minimum wage, the parliamentarian right. saying it can't be part of that reconciliation, but the far left of the Democratic Party, who knows? I don't know, Jim. I'm not going to, you know, and then if you get that, do you really, are you able to just move right on to infrastructure? One would hope so. One would hope we'd finally get to infrastructure.
President
given
Trump
it does
tried
seem
very
to have
hard.
Every week was infrastructure right. week. We never got an infrastructure bill, though.
No. Carl. No. I think America wants an infrastructure bill, but there's some reason someone always just puts a monkey wrench in it. And I want to talk to Ward Nye because Ward is really keyed on Martin Marietta, keyed on the states because there's states that really do road building. And then there's states that don't do anything. They're waiting for the federal government. And Ward is really concentrated on where the states are very bullish and want to have new roads. But the federal government has really not contributed very much at all.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk later this morning, Jim, about Buffett's letter, which goes into some detail about the amount of money that's going to be necessary to fix the grid, at least.
Very exciting. Very exciting.
I guess I hear the music. I guess we'll take a break. We'll talk
right.
about Buffett's letter to shareholders, the buyback, of course, the grid, the mea culpa on precision cast parts. David's got this great scoop now officially announced by Exxon about Ubbin and Angelakis going to the board. We'll talk about the retail earnings on the way and a lot more. Don't go anywhere.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable, high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to fight rising costs of inflation or pay off your debt or anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, can help. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been helping great investors like you. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking for tips, Yahoo Finance makes it super easy by putting all the tools and data you need in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and more. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. That's how Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you take a look at your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective is what great investors need. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
It is breaking news. It's news we brought you about an hour ago on Squawk Box. Been confirmed by the company. Jeff Ubbin and Mike Angelakis, new board members at ExxonMobil. Not an unimportant moment for this company as it continues to refresh its board, add to its board of directors. Of course, our viewers may know Ubbin, formerly the man behind Value Act, has moved on as well to start something called Inclusive Capital Partners, a focused ESG fund that hopes to raise as much as perhaps $8 billion and a decent amount of that may be allocated towards ExxonMobil, of which he's now going to be sitting on, is now sitting on the board. This has actually already happened. Mike Angelakis, of course, somebody we know well here, the former CFO of Comcast. Both bring certain expertise. Ubbin has been sitting on the board, by the way, Jim, of AES, which you know, and has sort of helped the transition there that has taken place from what was a coal base to more renewables. ExxonMobil, this is going to be a long, long process, but it is a transition that this company is going through, and it's one that is supported by the most important person on that board, the first guy, Darren Woods, who is behind a lot of this, who had this long conversation with D.E. Shaw that became invested in the stock a number of months ago. And was supportive of both these guys being put on the board. And Woods, Jim, seems to be all in on this idea. Not that you're going to become somehow carbon neutral in 10 years.
No.
But you are going to be able to use the expertise of engineering that Exxon has had to help to develop some of the technologies that are going to actually make carbon capture something that becomes a lot more price efficient, cost efficient, while you also transition your business. The same way, I guess, they did when it was whale oil to kerosene and kerosene to gasoline.
Rockefeller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Titan. You read it.
I read it
recently.
Great book. Now, David, when you look at the makeup of that board, there are a lot of people who are very thoughtful people. Mm-hmm. And we know them, William Weldon, Doug Oberholm from used to be Cat, Caterpillar. Ken Frazier, Ursula Burns, Angela Braly, all of these people are candidates to talk about ESG directly to Darren Woods. That is no longer, David, when you switch and you bring Ubbin in, you've got a board that might put more pressure than we thought on Exxon becoming a different company. Look at that board. I mean, the board is a very open-minded board.
And in a way, you also, if you're Woods, you have a partner and it's kind of pushing. I mean, which you need to do. You know, the boards are an interesting animal, and they really are. And having talked to so many people who, even in companies where you would expect somebody would speak up, sometimes it doesn't happen. They get into sort of a groupthink. And so you do need people to sort of push an agenda. Even as a CEO, you need to get your board in a certain place. But, Jim, we're going to be watching closely. They have an investor day coming up on Wednesday where I think they will lay out more, perhaps in more specificity and transparency than is typical for Exxon in terms of their their guidance when it comes to sort of this transition. Even also things like what the price of oil is at which they actually make money, which they not typically answered that question in the past. But those looking for this to be an overnight transition, of course not. By the way, the stock has performed very well in part because the underlying commodity has performed well. But it has outperformed Chevron over the last few months in a significant way.
Chevron was third best in the Dow.
Yep.
Or third best, I'm not sure exactly Dow, S&P, how much better it is. But I would say this, David, the commitment to the dividend changed everything. Because that dividend is very big, and Mr. Woods has made it very clear that dividend is pretty much sacrosanct. The other thing, David, that we have to talk about is they historically have not been as bad as people think when it comes to methane.
Right.
It's kind of surprising. You would think that they were one of these companies that hadn't focused on methane. They've tried to bring methane down. They're probably in the lower third of the companies that produce methane. But when you talk with them, they are still talking about things like algae. And algae's good. But algae's not a needle mover.
No. And listen, there are still many of these technologies have not been commercialized that are going to allow them to significantly reduce their carbon footprint. And even when you do talk to Mike Wirth or Darren Woods and the idea of EV-powered vehicles taking over the planet in 10 or 15 years, if that were to really happen, they still say, well, 75% of a barrel of oil doesn't go towards that.
No.
And so you've got that part of the business. CapEx and OpEx have come down at ExxonMobil.
Great scoop.
ExxonMobil.
We got to follow these. Angelakis, by the way, tough.
Tough. And somebody who also is obviously very well acquainted, Carl, as you might imagine, with the allocation of capital, which is an important part of this story, too. Let's not forget that. It's not just about the carbon neutral future. It's also about reducing CapEx and OpEx to the optimum level for this company.
Yeah, and Darren Woods on Squawk this Thursday, so we'll be curious to see how he addresses all of those things. We'll get to more in the energy space. GM rolling out some new iterations of the Bolt for this summer and the Hummer later this year. Futures continue to look good. More Squawk on the Streets back in a moment.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Okay, 3.5 minutes before we get started with trading. Let's get a mad dash, Micron.
There's really only been one semiconductor that's held up during this period, and it's Micron. You can see that chart. That's because they make flash, and flash has got good pricing, and they make DRAMs. That's got good pricing. They're going to be speaking on Wednesday. I think there's a possibility that they raise numbers at a conference. The reason why this is really important is we have to see if anyone follows along. Because we saw some terrible action in the semiconductors last week. And a lot of it was people saying, we don't want growth, we want value. And growth has been centered on cloud and semiconductors. So, David, we have to watch Micron to see if it can be the leader once again, because we just really got pancaked in this group. And the rotation was so evident that a lot of people were in despair on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah. You know, I mean, something else we have to keep an eye on is, of course, chip shortages, not related to Micron specifically, but just in terms of, well, autos. But we had HP on, of course, on, what was it, Friday, I guess,
Enrique
talking about they're going to be able to make their guidance based on what they see, but it's going to supply is going to be limited in certain areas of the economy, isn't it, Jim?
Yes, and a lot of this is because NXPI produces so much of what goes into an auto, and I understand that NXPI is very, very constrained. And remember, auto sales were very bad during the beginning of the pandemic. So a lot of the auto companies really cut back. The Chinese didn't. The Chinese did not cut back. And I think that's one of the reasons why they have first dibs. David, I don't know if you noticed that the new way that Biden wants to do this is to approach China with our allies. But remember, our allies, 25% it tends to be of what they sell is to China.
Right.
So they have tended to be not as harsh as, say, Peter Navarro was, who led the charge against China.
Yeah. But, Carl, it's not limited to cars. Of course, HP, printers,
right.
Computers, analog devices also, even though they make their own, some wafer components and things of that nature, you know, need to go into what they do. So we are keeping a close eye on sort of this broader shortage of chips, so to speak, across industries.
Yeah, whether it's lumber, Jim, or semiconductors, there's a lot of announcements this week of Wall Street conference calls trying to address whether we're in a regular cycle or a super cycle, or just how scarcity is going to be digested by the markets as we work our way into the summer. Jim, before the bell, we haven't really gotten your report card on Buffett's letter. The defense of buybacks, at least his own buyback, not all buybacks, and this lack of commentary either on SPACs, really, or on GME, although Munger took care of some of that last week.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what he basically said was, look, if you're a long-term investor, you can do well. And I think that was it really wasn't an offhanded attack or anything. I think it's just like, hey, guys, younger investors, you can do really well if you compound. Obviously, he has preferred people to just put money in an index fund. The most jarring thing was the Precision Cast Parts, which was the company that they obviously paid too much for. That's his words, $37 billion. He came on Squawk Box that morning, and he said he's paying a very high multiple, and it was highly unusual for him to do that. It was the largest acquisition, and it was a bad one with an $11 billion write-down. So, Carl, very self-effacing letter.
Yeah, he did say not his only mistake, but in his words, that was a big one. He says he paid too much. As a look at the opening bell, S&P almost uniformly green this morning as we're back above, getting closer back to 3,900. Jim, really quick, one thing you noticed as you look for trends this morning is the number of either secondaries or note offerings. I counted RCL, Norwegian, Twitter, and Shake Shack this morning.
Yeah, of these, I mean, obviously RCL, really smart to take advantage of the frantic buying by younger people. The buying at 4 a.m. was just insane. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking, because one thing I know what Royal Caribbean was thinking was this is an opportunity to be able to fix our balance sheet. Norwegian already had a good balance sheet, so I was a little surprised because I think that they have some very good orders. But the one that really was, I think, terrific was the Twitter announcement, because Twitter is investing. It was one of the things I had Ned Siegel on last week, the CFO. They're doing a $1.25 billion convertible note. I'm sure that they'll pay, you know, they'll get incredible prices. David, when you do a convertible note and your Twitter, you pay through what a mortgage costs people. I mean, I just think that Twitter is a totally loved stock after being a disliked stock. And the reason why is because they're spending. And you hear over and over again from analysts who are saying, you know what, Twitter was dormant and now they're spending. And this is very good news for them because they had fallen behind even Pinterest. I shouldn't say Pinterest, pretty good, but you know what I mean. They've fallen behind companies that you didn't think of as being necessarily a must buy. But I think Pinterest is a must buy and Twitter's becoming a must buy.
Yeah, you've said that. And obviously the stock has been a big buy so far this year, up 44%.
It's the best. Look at that.
As you see, year to date, as we just begin the month of March. But you're right, $1.25 billion. We don't have the pricing on it, Jim, but one would expect it's pretty aggressive.
Yep.
And, you know, the question has always been, right, will they make the right investments? Are they innovating quickly enough? Are they changing the platform in ways that they should? You seem to think the answer now is yes.
Well, I was on Spaces last week, and I was only given one tweet. They told me I tweeted like at 8:30 for a 9 p.m. show. It was kind of a beta. And we had 3,000 people instantly, and it wasn't – they were very good. So I said, look, I can't tell who these people are. One of them was called, Acorn, and another guy was called Super Joe. You know, I mean, you have to know who these people are because you invite them in to talk.
Right.
And I saw Rich Greenfield, who's a fixture. Jason Calcanis used to be a guy that we thought about in New York as the Squawk. Remember, we was like Alley, New York, you know, Silicon Alley.
Well, he comes on all the time on the show.
Yes. But what I liked about it, David, was that it is a rival to this fabled Clubhouse that everybody likes so much.
Right. Right. Which, yes, Carl, which has grown dramatically as well. I have yet to participate. Not sure I will.
Why?
I don't know if you have. why? I don't know.
Yeah.
I like to give these things time. Time to season a little bit, get a sense for them.
Well, Carl, you know that these things are fun. They're fun.
Yeah, I've got to check out Clubhouse myself. As for Twitter, I think it was last week, Goldman went to 112. Today, it's Baird goes to 81, MKM goes to 95. So you guys are right. The street's definitely re-rating, at least on the price targets for Twitter. Jim, last week, the Journal took a look at Carol Tomei and her efforts to simplify UPS. Today, it's a big story on Jane Fraser at Citi, who officially takes over today.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Carol Tomei piece was good, and I had her on Mad Money, and the stock is hated right now. I don't know why. Sells at 18 times earnings, 2.5% yield. She guaranteed that Christmas would be good, and it was. She's a person of her word. Jane Fraser comes in. I've always felt that when would a major bank be run by a woman, given the fact that the finances in so many households are run by women? And I think that this is a great advantage for Citi if they really make it clear that Jane Fraser is coming in and wants to do well for the American consumer. Now, obviously, this is a worldwide company. David, the reason why I think this is so significant is because we're really starting to see some women get to higher levels. We're not seeing minorities get to higher levels, which is disappointing. But women are starting to get. I had two women CEOs on Friday. I mean, we're seeing women in tech. We're seeing women in banking. So maybe the glass ceiling to some degree is being cracked.
Maybe. Maybe. Not enough.
No, obviously not.
No. And in banking, it's interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see. I mean, she comes in at a crucial juncture. You heard, was it Mike Mayo talking earlier on Squawk Box saying, he typically will say some things that others won't talking about.
Surprised he wasn't in my spaces.
I don't want to quote him. I mean, I heard it, but I can't remember exactly. But he didn't mince words when he came to the disaster he seemed to feel that city was very recently.
Yeah, he
certainly in terms of their systems failure.
Whoa. Well, there were issues that Revlon business.
And they're not getting that money back.
No.
You saw the most recent ruling from a judge. I think $500 million of it was not returned and doesn't need to be.
That was
for
incredible.
The payment that was incorrectly sent
that was
by
incredible.
City on behalf of Revlon, that city, it's city's money, not Revlon's.
Right. Stock is still below tangible book, so they could continue to buy. I'd like to see her analysis of whether she wants to continue to buy the way that Michael Corbett did. I do think that J.P. Morgan is still by far the leader.
You like the banks here, though, overall? I mean, they've had a great move as a group. Over the course of the year, you point out J.P. Morgan. I mean, it is up 17% off its most recent highs. But, you know, you're still talking about very close to its all-time highs.
Right. Well, you've covered the situations, Carl, where as rates go up, people love them until rates go up so much that people hate them. And business activity is slowed down. You mentioned lumber on the very jarring Home Depot call. Lumber's doubled in a year. Copper was at $4.17. Immediately, you know, copper, there's been two mines that have been restarted. So there's possibilities, and the Baltic freight has come down. But you know, Carl, that at a certain point, people are going to say, wait a second, isn't housing going to cool because rates are too high? Housing, you can get a 3.25 conforming right now, which is still really, really low. But I do think mm-hmm. that the people who love the banks turn on them very quickly if they hear anything bad about bad loans.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of the performance of the sector, Jim, which is one of the best performing ones this morning, the story about Goldman losing a couple of senior bankers to Walmart.
Wow.
As Walmart tries to fire up that fintech startup. I mean, it's not the last time we're going to talk about the Wall Street diaspora moving into non-traditional ways of fintech.
Is this one shocking? It is kind of. I mean, David Solomon obviously wishes them well. And these guys are hitters, okay? These guys are real hitters, and they understand how to set up a fintech bank. They did Marcus. I've used Marcus. You get some good rates. David, you know that this is maybe Walmart's second attempt to become a bit of a bank. What do you think?
I don't know what to think. Certainly they have access to, and they've got a lot of names now, even Walmart.com as well, right?
Right, but
it's
Mark
Lord people
left,
walking in the store.
I do. I like this move. I like it because so many people go to Walmart each week, and why shouldn't they be? Why should all of this go to PayPal and Square? Now, I don't know their relation with Walmart, but I'm saying that in general, when you speak to younger people, they're on Cash App or they're on PayPal, and they want to buy. You know, they want to have their Klarna, buy now, pay later. These are all the big things that the younger people want, and it's a big change from what our generation did.
Yeah. As we watch the broader market advance about 1.5%. Guys, not a big morning on M&A, even though the practitioners of it, whether lawyers or bankers, seem to expect big things this year, judging from the conversations I've had in recent weeks. But not a lot of headlines this morning. Did want to just stay on top of that CoreLogic deal that we've been following for some time. CoStar did increase its bid, or at least I should say added cash to a bid that previously was solely all stock. Now they're adding $450 million, about $6 a share in cash, to what is now what they're calling a $97 a share deal. And by the way, it's more or less is a $97 a share deal because CoStar has not moved down. There's a look. They also termination date 6 months, but then another six, another three. So that adds up to 15 months. But what do we want to tell you here? Well, it seems likely that this is going to be deemed as likely to lead to a superior proposal over the $80 they've accepted from Stone Point from private equity. So we're watching shares of CoreLogic, and we will wait for the board to reach that determination. That seems likely they did address their concerns on antitrust. They did address their concerns about the termination fee. Doesn't seem to be much left to be concerned about if you are that CoreLogic board, unless CoStar's stock price were to take a deep dive, which, as you see right there, Jim, it is not.
No. Not a lot of M&A, and there's been a cessation of the endless IPOs, not the SPACs.
We haven't even mentioned the word SPAC.
Well, there we do.
Here we are, 40 minutes in. What do you, I haven't actually, I was busy with ExxonMobil and some other things. I haven't kept a close eye on SPAC world this morning. I've heard a couple of rumors, but.
I haven't either. I mean, I'm looking at Oscar that comes public this week, and I think that's going to be a very good deal. That's a traditional.
The health insurer.
Yeah, traditional IPO.
That's the actual old-fashioned way.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be one that's a disruptor.
Right.
And could be very good. And I think people who are looking for a good, solid growth company should look at Oscar today because it comes later this week.
Okay. Yeah, no flying cars.
Well, speaking of this week.
Yeah, sorry, Carl, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, Jim, of this week, we're going to get Target, Dollar Tree, Costco, Gap, Kroger, Kohl's. Are you looking for clues within retail as to how they're going to manage this new surge of maybe in-person demand?
Oh, very much. I mean, I think that Kohl's is going to be interesting, of course, because we had John Duskin in there with the almost 10% stake. We had some positive chatter where people are talking about the activist agenda being right and the board, maybe board needs a refresh. But yeah, I mean, look, everyone has not liked what Walmart said. I thought Doug McMillon made a case that basically was the reset that he did a few years ago, where the stock went from 90 to 80. But Carl, I am addicted to these stocks because these are the ones that really got hurt last week.
Yeah, we're going to watch that. Guys, every sector is green. VIX back down below 25. Interesting way. It's the best day at this point for the markets in exactly a month. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, guys. What a great start to March. 10-1 advancing the declining stocks. You don't see that very often. And of course, lower yield means less pressure on the stock market. And that means the reflation trade can reassert itself. Take a look at the sectors. You'll see what I say. Now, it's a broad rally. So tech is leading. That's also a very good sign. But energy, banks, industrials, materials, there's your reflation trade. That sector was up dramatically. We saw some of these energy stocks up 20%, banks up 20% in February, industrials up 8, 9, 10%, materials up 5 to 10%. This is all in February. This trade is now continuing. A lot of this is dependent on interest rate pressures that we're seeing. Travel and leisure stocks flying again this morning. All of these names, of course, you heard about these secondaries some of these companies are offering, but Carnival was up big in February. All of these big, big moves here for these companies. I looked at some travel in Florida in April. Things are booking up very, very fast. Airlines booking up fast. Ones that I looked at in the last week, at least going down to Miami in the month of April. If you look at what these cruise lines and what the travel stocks were doing in February, huge moves to the upside, 30, 40% right across the board. And as you heard from the guys this morning, a lot of them talking about offering secondaries at this point. So we're entering March with the reflation trade still very much intact, but there is a little bit worry about this rate hike. And there's a lot of talk about the old TINA trade. Remember that? I haven't used that word in a long time. There is no alternatives to stocks. That was a favorite idea for the last several years. As interest rates have been this low, who wants to be in bonds at this point? But higher yields recently in the last few weeks have started to put pressure on high multiple stocks. And I'm talking largely technology stocks, many of which the big ones trade at 30, 40, 50 times forward multiples. We've seen a fairly tough time in the last few weeks as those rates have risen. And there's been people talking about the TINA trade is not so obvious anymore. Maybe not dead, but it's not as obvious anymore. And the good news, of course, is that reflation trade still is intact. And if you look at the performance of tech stocks in February, which is a pretty good month for that reflation trade, you see flattish to down. You know, Apple is, you know, 12, 13, 14% off of its historic highs. The big movers that we watch every day, at best, generally flattish, at worst down 4% for Amazon, 8% as you see there for Apple. So there's your debate about TINA there. Higher rates really puts pressure on high growth multiple stocks, high multiple stocks. Finally, as for Mr. Buffett, loved reading his letter as everybody else did, and love watching the concentration of his stocks. It is truly awesome to see the portfolio that they have put together. I mean, look at these numbers. They own 18% of American Express. They're the largest single shareholder of American Express. They're the largest shareholder of Bank of America at 11%. They're the largest shareholder of U.S. Bancorp. They're the largest holder of Coca-Cola and 5.4%. They are the second largest holder of Apple after Vanguard, which owns significantly more. Of course, this is not a value portfolio. What would you call it? I guess you would call it a pragmatist portfolio. Mr. Buffett became much more of a pragmatist over the years, and that investment in Apple, not a value stock, has certainly paid off for him. So here's to pragmatic investing at this point. Great read from Mr. Buffett, as always. Carl, back to you.
All right, Bob, that's a good one. Yeah, everybody should take a look at it, Bob Pisani. Let's get to Rick Santelli this morning as well with some data on the menu. Hey, Rick.
Yes, a PMI, this manufacturing PMI from Market, M-A-R-K-I-T, is expected to be around 58.5, which was the mid-February read. We moved up 1/10, 58.6, we toss out 58.5. This becomes the final read, and sequentially, it is a bit of a reversal. 59.2 is the final January read, and of course, that was a high watermark post-COVID, so we have moved back a bit, but still solid number, well above the expansion contraction line, and well above the cycle low at 36.1 that was in April. Let's move to the market, shall we? Pretty much three-day charts give us everything we need to know in the fixed income side, the sovereign side, actually. Look at a three-day chart of 10. You see the high watermark there on the left, spiked up to 161. That gives us a lot of information. That is going to be an area that we pay close attention to on a breakout. Should we get above it? But now we see the resistance in the low to mid 150s. Look for that to continue to work. It doesn't mean the move is over. Let's see where the support comes in below the market. If you look at Boone's high watermark, minus 20 basis points. And there's a lot of issues going on with negative rates. A great journal story about how some of the bigger German banks, of course, are starting to move down the food chain on who they're actually charging fees to and fines to hold your money because negative rates, the central bank charges them a minus 50 basis points. That is starting to get pervasive again, negative rates, and it really augurs for a potential stopper bringing in buyers on our long maturities. And finally, year-to-date of the dollar index. This is a key week last week. We held those early January lows where we were closed under 90 the first week of the year, and that was the lowest level since the spring of 2018. Holding there is very significant. Many believe the dollar index may have its worst days behind them. Why? Think about how the rest of the world is. Are we the cleanest of the dirty shirts on the foreign exchange side? Yes, and the reserve currency. Carl, Jim, David, back to you.
All right, Rick, we'll see you later. Rick Santelli. In the meantime, best gains in a month. Every Dow component is green, led by Boeing. And energy is going to be your leading sector at the moment. Squawk on the Street continues after a break. All right, Dow's up almost 500, 1.5% gain here as we kick off a new month, Jim. And I guess that kind of raises the question, is this about flows and new money for a new month or something different in the way the street sees the reopening?
Look, I think that there's a fabulous piece by our friend David Costin at Goldman, who just emphatically says, look, you just can't trade off a rate. They're just still way too low. But he does talk about be careful of the companies that are fast growing that don't have any earnings. And I think that's going to reassert itself. People would rather own Boeing than they would a lot of the new cloud stocks. I use Boeing because of this United Airlines order that I think is so significant. I do question whether we're not going to go right back, David, to the value trade, because what people want, and I don't, value is a big rubric, people want to play May, June. They're watching J&J, and they're saying, okay, we're traveling. Let's go. And there are not that many travel stocks.
No. Are you better off selling and or shorting some of the stay-at-home plays?
Shorting.
No, right?
Shorting.
People don't do that anymore?
David, shorting?
Yeah.
Do you have like a private bunker somewhere?
I know. I guess I said the wrong thing. Yeah. Well, maybe a portfolio. Maybe they could short your index. That doesn't exist really yet, does it?
Well, I don't know, David. I'm still thinking about where I can hide you. Maybe a hunter? Yeah. Somewhere.
Yeah. Guess I said the wrong thing.
Adirondacks? Maybe I can bury you under Mount Marcy.
Just selling. Maybe they should stay-at-home stocks are no longer a buy. I'm not saying that. I'm just questioning.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
For clearing up that misconception.
Short break here, all kidding aside, and more market coverage on the other side of this break. Don't go away. March is normally a winning month, but this is a nice way to start the next 30 or so days. S&P breadth very positive, up 62 points. Best gains in about a month since the first couple days of February. More Squawk on the Street continues in a moment. Don't go away. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
There's a lot of talk about J&J and how quickly they can ramp up. I had Emergent BioOne, which is their partner. I just want to go over what they said to me, which is they said they had agreed upon and be able to make hundreds of millions of doses for J&J. So I think that the 3-4 million that Alex Gorsky's talking about does not include what Emergent Bio can do, which is one of the reasons why I am so bullish on the reopening of America, because J&J and Emergent Bio work together. And when I see hundreds of millions, what that says to me is it's almost over. It's almost over.
Yep. Easy to store, one shot, 100 million at least in the U.S. by June, Jim. It's really encouraging. How about tonight? Martin okay. Marietta?
Martin, look, I've got infrastructure people keep talking about. Well, they're the number one infrastructure company because they make aggregates. They're the company that makes roads, and it's been a big business. SailPoint, still one more of these companies that is about identity and zero tolerance. People care tremendously who watch the show about cybersecurity, and Mark McClain is pretty good at it. Is the show really over?
Another big week. I know. It goes fast, Jim.
Can I stick around?
We'll see you tonight, of course.
No?
Yeah, you know you're always welcome to, but I don't know where you find the time.
No,
you got to start prepping.
Let's get some guests. We can stick around. Let's get Darren Woods.
Yes. Yes.
Right? I mean,
that would be good.
We're
going to hear
Darren
from him later in the week.
Would that be now? Oh, he's somewhere else.
We'll see.
Are we? We're booking on the air.
Yeah, we'll see.
See you later,
we'll see
Jim.
What we can do.
Mad Money. 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.